sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
If you consider yourself a conspiracy theorist, I've got some good news for you. Here's a new definition of the term conspiracy theorist. It's nothing more than a derogatory title used to dismiss a critical thinker. So again, nothing more than a derogatory title used to dismiss a critical thinker. According to an article posted on the website zengardner.com entitled Conspiracy Theorist, The New Normal, researchers, psychologists, and social scientists, mostly in the U.S. and United Kingdom, say data indicate that, contrary to those mainstream media stereotypes, conspiracy theorists appear to be more sane than people who accept official versions of controversial and contested events. The most recent study was published in July 2013 by psychologist Michael J. Wood and Karen M. Douglas of the University of Kent in the UK, entitled, What About Building 7? A Social Psychological Study of Online Discussion of 9/11 Conspiracy Theories. The study compared conspiracist or pro-conspiracy theory and conventionalist or anti-conspiracy comments on news websites. The researchers noted that they were surprised to find that it is now more conventional to leave so-called conspiracist comments than conventional ones. Of the 2,174 comments collected, 1,459 were coded as conspiracist and 715 as conventionalist, the researchers wrote. The research showed that people who favored the official account of 9/11 were generally more hostile. So among people who comment on news articles, those who discount official government accounts of events like the 9/11 attacks and the assassination of John F. Kennedy outnumber believers by more than 2-1. That means the pro-conspiracy commenters are those who are now expressing what is considered conventional wisdom, while the anti-conspiracy commenters represent a small, beleaguered minority that is often scoffed at and shunned. Perhaps becoming frustrated that their alleged mainstream viewpoints are no longer considered as such by the majority, those who are anti-conspiracy commenters often showed anger and disgust in their posts. The research showed that people who favored the official account of 9/11 were generally more hostile when trying to persuade their rivals, said the study. Also, it seems that those who do not believe in the conspiracies were not just hostile, but fanatically attached to their own conspiracy theories as well. The researchers said that according to the anti-conspiracy holders, their own theory of 9/11, one which says 19 Muslims, none of whom could fly commercial airliners with any proficiency, pulled off an amazing surprise attack under the direction of a man on dialysis who was living in a cave somewhere in Afghanistan, is unwaveringly true. Meanwhile, conspiracists, on the other hand, did not have to pretend to have a theory that completely explained the events of 9/11. For people who think 9/11 was a government conspiracy, the focus is not on promoting a specific rival theory, but in trying to debunk the official account, the researchers said. As reported by Veterans Today, in short, the new study by Wood and Douglas suggests that the negative stereotypes of the conspiracy theorist, a hostile fanatic wedded to the truth of his own fringe theory, accurately describes the people who defend the official account of 9/11, not those who dispute it. The study also found that conspiracy believers discuss historical content, like viewing the JFK assassination as a precedent for 9/11, more than the antis. It also found that conspiracy believers do not like to be labeled as such. These and other findings are contained in a new book, Conspiracy Theory in America, by political scientist Lance DeHaven Smith, which was published last year by the University of Texas Press. He explained why people don't like to be labeled as conspiracy theorists. Quote, the CIA's campaign to popularize the term conspiracy theory and make conspiracy belief a target of ridicule and hostility must be credited, unfortunately, with being one of the most successful propaganda initiatives of all time, he said. To read this research on conspiracy theorists, you can go to the website zengardner.com. There's a link at the Zen Gardner website for the actual research itself, so I encourage you to check that out. So now, when somebody calls you a conspiracy theorist, you can say, "Thank you for recognizing my critical thinking skills." And now it's my pleasure to welcome to the show a fellow conspiracy theorist and critical thinker, Steve Fournier. So, Steve Fournier, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Cheryl.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you decided to run for Attorney General for the state of Connecticut?
Yes, I'm a lawyer. I'm a retired lawyer. I'm kind of old, and I'm semi-retired. You never get out of it entirely. You always have things left over that you have to do. But I've been involved with third-party politics for a long time and been involved in the Green Party for a number of years, too, ever since Nader ran on the Green Party ticket. And 4 years ago, when we needed a candidate for Attorney General, I did it, and I managed to get 1.5% of the vote on the Green Party line. And so that meant that we had this ballot line saved for us in this election. And I didn't want to do it because, like I say, I'm kind of old. It'd be nice to have somebody that can take the stairs two at a time in this job. But if you can't have that, and I couldn't find anybody else that wanted to do it, because after all, you're not going to win. And you have to face a lot of people that say, "What in the hell are you doing this for if you're not going to win?" And so really, I couldn't find anybody that wanted to. And this is one of the few elective offices that has qualifications attached to it. You have to have 10 years in practice. I have a lot more than that, and we don't have that many people that even have the qualification. And so I decided that I would do it, and I'm doing it. And I've been a people's lawyer, really, in my career. I was admitted to the bar in 1978, so I've been around for quite a few years, and I always thought I would represent the downtrodden. I mean, you can't always do that, but I didn't want to be against the little guy for the big guy, so I never was. And that's good. But on the other hand, if you do that, if that's the way that you pursue your career in law, you see an awful lot of injustice. And this affected me. I would say that it demoralized me and discouraged me. And I tried to get out of practicing law any number of times, but I kept on ending up back in this profession because it is discouraging to find that the laws are only obligatory to the extent that they regulate the little people, and that for the people at the top, they mean nothing. You know, they're a joke to them. They laugh at us for being sticklers about things like imprisonment without trial, something we've been doing for the last 12, 15 years or so, or assassinating people, something we've been doing habitually. And when I say we, although I have never agreed with these policies, I feel as if I'm responsible, you know, because I didn't do anything to stop them. And so I put the blame on all of us for sitting back and letting this happen. And now here's a spot where I can at least bring some issues before the public. And if I ever were to be elected, and it's always possible, people could decide that they're not going to pay attention to glossy pieces of advertising that come in the mail, and that they're going to do some of the basic work of citizenship and find out who's running for the office and what the office does and what the people will do if they're elected. If people were to do that, they might vote for me. But they probably won't do that. They probably will vote Democrat if they're Democrat, and Republican if they're Republican, and that's going to be the extent of it.
Do you think in this climate where most people are really disgusted with our government that you may have a better chance?
Oh, yes, I think I do. As a matter of fact, there was a poll that came out just a couple of days ago that showed my candidacy with 9% support. Now, that would include a lot of people that don't know me, would have to, because I'm not well known. People know me around Hartford, but not so much out of town. So that, I think, reflects dissatisfaction, and that's an opportunity. But 9% doesn't win an election, because we've been together in the peace movement, and we've been together in this endeavor. And you know that we are abolitionists, and like women's suffrage advocates, that people like us, peace advocates, social justice advocates, have occupied this minority status for years and years and years. It's hard to win elections on a platform that says no more war. It shouldn't be. But it is. And so we face that fact. And someday, you know, we shall overcome. At some point, the majority comes over.
Yeah. As a candidate, are you invited to debates, or are you getting the same media coverage that the other candidates get?
No. But with 9% support in a poll, that is waking some people up, I suppose. And if that support were to increase, then it might bring other people to consciousness. And one of the things that it does is bring this issue, this 9/11 issue, into the political discourse. They have to. If they mention my name, they pretty much have to say, here's a candidate for attorney general who is demanding an investigation into 9/11. So the question comes up, didn't we already do that? And that's when the discussion can start.
And let me ask you about that. When did you become interested in 9/11 truth and why?
On 9/11/2001, I was working as a computer programmer. It was a summer job I had, and we were assembled in the boss's office because he said, you know, a plane hit the World Trade Center, so it was on the screen. And then we saw the explosion in the other building, you know, which may or may not have been an airplane. I don't know. But that was the story that we were getting, that an airplane had hit the other building. And I said right out loud, I said, this has to be a U.S. government operation. I'm an Air Force veteran, and the Air Force doesn't fail to show up. They don't. These planes were off course for a long time, and they were not on the transponders, the identification friend or foe system that we have. And these pilots that are on the flight line, they don't make mistakes. They're suited up and ready to go 24 hours a day.
Right.
And they get up there in a matter of seconds, and they can be at any spot along the coastline in a matter of 5 to 10 minutes. And so it is impossible that this could have happened except with the collusion of the United States government. I said that out loud. I got fired the next day.
Wow.
Yeah, he said, don't bother coming.
Wow.
I don't need you anymore. So from the first day, I felt that that couldn't have happened without gross recklessness or collusion. And collusion seemed to be the most likely, even right there on that day. And since then, of course, all these anomalies have come to light. And you couldn't call me a conspiracy theorist because I don't have a theory. I only have questions and suspicions. It's hard for me to put together a theory because it seems so such an outrage that this could have happened and that they would dare to perpetrate this atrocity in front of everybody. See, that seems to have been the point. At least by one theory that you could pursue, that would be the point, would be to terrorize us.
Shock
more
and awe.
Easily, yeah, more easily manipulate us. And in the end, pluck us like chickens, take what we have.
Yeah.
I think that is what's going on. There's a vast profit made out of this terror that we've been in.
Right.
And who are the terrorists? We haven't learned who they are. I don't believe that they are the people that were identified.
Right.
I think it's others. Right. And we're entitled to know that. And an attorney general is positioned to do something about that, I think.
Yeah, tell me about that. What does an attorney general do? What is the mission or the role of the office? And how would you use that to get this real investigation?
In Connecticut, the attorney general is... he's the legal representative of the state. So if you have a personal lawyer, or University of Hartford has lawyers, and the state of Connecticut has a lawyer, and that is the state of Connecticut's lawyer. And that person represents the state in all civil litigation, advises the governor on legal issues, advises the legislature on legal issues, and investigates various kinds of activities that would be prejudicial to the interests of the state. Here's an action that happened right on the state line, just a stone's throw from the Connecticut state line, that it affected a lot of Connecticut people directly and all Connecticut people indirectly. If we are terrorized, and if this terror originated in Washington, D.C., then the state of Connecticut and the people of Connecticut have been subjected to a gross tort, what we call a tort in law,
right.
A gross misconduct. And we're entitled to a redress of grievances as a state. I believe that. And then, you know, there are laws also that can help us. For example, there's a law, it's called the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. And it's meant to allow prosecutions of organizations, members of organizations, it's a prosecution of individuals, who use an organization to pursue illegal ends. In other words, turn a legitimate organization, and that can be anything from a store to a syndicate of some kind, to a government or a labor union, who knows what it might be. And when people conspire and use a legitimate organization to promote a criminal end, they can be held answerable in federal court and state court as well. And what has to be shown is that they engaged in criminal conduct, in a pattern of criminal conduct, and that they committed certain specified crimes, including murder. And here we have a whole bunch of murders that are unsolved. At least they've never been solved to the satisfaction of any judicial authority. There hasn't been any adjudication of any kind here. And we just sit back and let this happen? No one was punished? If anybody in the United States government is responsible for this, is it right that those persons should be walking around unaccountable? I don't think so.
No, and my understanding is most of them got promotions.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. So if you get elected, would you do this immediately? And would you get resistance? Do you need anyone else's support to do this? Or could you make this happen?
Well, that's a good question, I think, because I don't know the answer to that question. I do believe that now the attorney general supervises a staff of lawyers, big staff of lawyers. And I think there's 250 of them. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of lawyers there, and they're pretty salty people. They know what they're doing. They have their areas of expertise. And if I were Attorney General, I would assemble a committee of them. I would probably pick people who haven't thought about this, who haven't come around to my point of view, and ask them from a point of view of skepticism, ask them to investigate the various concerns that we've raised in our discussion group and see what they come up with. Because one of the big problems, one of the big impediments that we seem to have so much trouble surmounting is people's unwillingness to look at this.
Right.
You know, they look the other way. I was interviewed yesterday at the Hartford Courant, which is the local newspaper, and the editor asked me about this topic. And, you know, she said right out, she said, well, I just can't believe that. And I'm thinking, you're a journalist, supposedly, and aren't you even suspicious? And I asked her, I said, doesn't this raise a suspicion in your mind that prompts you to, you know, no, it doesn't. It doesn't, because I need to turn from it. I need not to look at it. It's much too painful to look at. That was, I think, her stance and the stance of the other editor that was in the room with us, too. It's very painful, but, you know, they had to talk about it. It's part of my platform is to investigate this. And we would have a subpoena power if we were to do this, because we would be engaged in civil litigation, which gives you that. And we would be trying to find out what happened. And it would be a staff of lawyers. And I do believe that if I were to assemble a staff of lawyers and make them look at this, that they would all come around to the unavoidable truth that we don't know what happened. The way they say that it happened, it could not have happened. It was something else. And
clear that what they're telling us can't be true.
It can't be true.
Right. So if people would just take the time to look at it.
Not only can it be true, but for me, a lawyer, it's an affront to be presented with this and be expected to believe it or accept it. Because what they're saying to me is, you're dishonest or you're an idiot, one or the other.
Right.
Either you're going to pretend to believe this or you're actually going to believe it. Either way is no good. And it's exasperating for a lawyer to be faced with that kind of situation, you know?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, you have two opponents. One is the incumbent George Jepps for the Democratic Party, and then Kai Westby for the Republican. Now, we can assume that George Jepsen would never do an investigation since he's been there for 4 years and hasn't done one yet.
Maybe not. Maybe he hasn't thought of it. Maybe it didn't occur to him.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll remind him of something. Who knows?
That would be great. And Kai Westby, the Republican, do you know anything about whether he would pursue an investigation into this?
Well, I brought it up at a forum that we were at together, and he didn't comment on it, so I assume that it's not going to be on his. His main concern seems to be gun laws, and we're on opposite sides of that. And he's anti-Washington, D.C., too, as I am. I do believe that this terror that's been imposed on us is a gross constitutional violation. And I think that he might agree with that, too. But he would come at it, I think, from a little bit different perspective.
So your opponents will both be getting $812,000 of public money for the campaign under the campaign finance laws. They were introduced a few years back. Will you be getting that also? Or as a third party, are you not eligible? Or how does that work?
In order to get financing, I would have to first raise a sum of several thousand dollars on my own, and then I would have to produce thousands and thousands of signatures and submit them to prove that I'm serious, I suppose. I don't know exactly what that's supposed to prove, but it's pretty much out of reach. I mean, I think I have a principled objection to the way that elections are run, and I'm not so sure that I would feel comfortable spending a bunch of money, other people's money, on advertising, because I don't think that advertising really gives people much of a message. It shows them your face.
Right, there's not a lot of policy that comes
out of it. No, not a lot comes out of it. And I spent a few bucks on the last time on advertising, and I don't think that I really got anything out of it. I don't think it's asking too much for people to do some research, to find out what candidates stand for. It's easy enough to do. You can read the newspapers. Mm-hmm. You won't get much there, but you'll get something. And you can go to the library where the computers are that have ample information on every candidate for every office, and you can find out all about people. And I don't think it's too much to ask. In fact, I've come to the point that I'm saying I wouldn't do it any other way. I wouldn't run and give away a bunch of glossy advertising and get elected that way. If you want me, you have to do some work to get me.
So you're not just a critical thinker about 9/11. What are some of the other concerns you have that you will be running on as part of your platform, in addition to the 9/11 investigation?
I think there's more to challenge in Washington policy and in Connecticut policy as well. For one thing, we have a privatization movement that's taking place, and it's right in front of us. And it doesn't take a smart person to realize that when you bring private industry in, they're going to want to make a profit. And so that means that's going to cost you more. Okay, not less, more, always more. They'll want to make money. And also, it's going to degrade whatever service it is that you're going to be getting, because that's what you do to make a profit. You degrade the service so you get more money at the end. And so it's kind of, to say that it's counterintuitive is really a gross understatement. It's foolish for us to continue to pursue this policy of privatization. And here we are. The federal government has so many contractors that are feeding at this trough to the tune of millions and millions of dollars, and especially under this national security state that we've adopted since 9/11. Mm-hmm. These people, the war makers, they get to sell you the bullet, and then you blow up the bullet, and then you need another one. What a deal that is for them, you know? They love this. And so the war, the racketeering that's taken place in the justice system, I mean, if you go back to the Bush years, they actually politicized the U.S. Attorney's Office all over this country, and nobody was held accountable for it, not a single person. You know, they just let them get away with it. I think that a state, and the state of Connecticut, I think, is ideally suited, being a kind of an enlightened place with well-educated people and concerned people, and with a tradition, too, of, I think, law-abiding decency, if not a lot of courtesy. But we do it in a rude way, but we have our principles. And I think that we could challenge the federal government in many ways for its abuses of power, and we don't do it. We have no guts. Who's going to hold them responsible for holding people without trial? The courts won't do it. Maybe a state government could do it. Maybe a state, because we are, this is not, as people say, a homeland, okay? Mm-hmm. This is a union of sovereign states, and we've given up our sovereignty as if it didn't count for anything, but it does. And so you get an attorney general in there that is a throat-cutting lawyer, which I would be, and who knows where we might go against the federal government.
You could try and get other states involved and do it as...
Oh, yeah, all those politicians that are all running for governor of their state would be really happy to join this, wouldn't they?
But just a thought. There might be some other free thinker out there like you. Steve, is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, yes. I am livid. You know, I'm enraged. And I think that people should be enraged over this. I don't think that even though that you try to go on with your life and smile when you can and enjoy the kids' birthdays, still, there ought to be a seething within you because of what's been done to us. You know, this idea that they can terrorize us, really make us afraid without, I'm not afraid, and you aren't either, but a lot of people are. And the fact that they can do that without having to pay any penalty, without having to answer for it, we should be mad about that.
Well, Steve, I really want to thank you for running for the Attorney General's office in the state of Connecticut, because I know as a third-party candidate, it's really difficult. It's an uphill battle. It's sort of David against Goliath kind of thing. And to take that on and have the courage to do it, I really thank you. Thank you very much for doing that.
Well, thanks for publicizing this candidacy.
And thank you for being on the show. Steve Fournier is not alone as a politician wanting a new investigation into the events of 9/11. He's in good company with other critical thinkers that appear on the website Political Leaders for 9/11 Truth, or PL911Truth.org. Here's what their petition says on the website. Whereas the Bush-Cheney administration's public interpretation of the 9/11 attacks has had radical, largely negative consequences for the United States of America and the world as a whole, and whereas the official investigations of these attacks that have been carried out thus far were led by individuals closely aligned with or even employed by the Bush-Cheney administration. And whereas the conclusions of these investigations differ radically from those that have been reached by independent researchers with various kinds of professional expertise, and whereas organizations of such researchers, including architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, firefighters for 9/11 Truth, lawyers, pilots, religious leaders, scholars, and veterans for 9/11 Truth, have called for a new, truly independent investigation, and whereas we believe it is long past time for political leaders to heed these calls. Therefore, we, the undersigned members of Political Leaders for 9/11 Truth, ask President Barack Obama to authorize a new, truly independent investigation to determine what happened on 9/11. And some of the signatories of these politicians are from New Hampshire, California, Florida, Texas, Colorado, Massachusetts, South Dakota, Arizona, New York, Vermont, North Carolina, Georgia, Utah, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and also internationally from Norway, Australia, Germany, Italy, France, New Zealand, Canada, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Pakistan, Russia, Belgium, and the UK. Here's what Bob Bowman of Florida has to say. He was the director of Advanced Space Programs Development for the U.S. Air Force. in the Ford and Carter administrations, and he says the 9/11 tragedy has been used as an excuse for two deadly wars of aggression, for taking away our rights through the misnamed Patriot Act, for destroying America's reputation around the world with acts of torture and war crimes, and for transferring trillions of dollars in wealth from the people to global investors, banks, and weapons manufacturers. Even now, the phony war on terror continues under a new administration. Only by exposing the truth of the events of 9/11 can we end this madness and achieve real peace and justice. And here's what John Paul McClellan, chief election judge for Orange County in North Carolina, says. 9/11 truth is the most important issue facing the world today. It is the key to understanding the true nature of our government and its interaction with governments, organizations, and individuals throughout the world. There is no issue facing our nation that is not negatively affected by the pervasive secret government that is behind events like 9/11. And here's what Gerstrom Ole, a member of parliament from Denmark, has to say. I have studied the events of 9/11 since the very day. The more I get down into the facts, the more obvious it is that this was an inside job. The planning must have taken years. The cover-up is being worked at hard. The significance for our poor planet is enormous. Getting the truth out will change the political climate like we have never seen before. And again, that website is pl911truth.org. And there are over 58 political leaders who've already signed the petition. It's nice to know that we have a candidate running for attorney general who's concerned with pursuing 9/11 truth. I've also contacted George Jepson's campaign to get his comments on a new 9/11 investigation, and have also invited him on the show to discuss this topic. To date, I haven't gotten a response to those requests. And I'm trying to contact the Republican candidate for Attorney General Kai Wesby to hear his opinion on a new investigation into 9/11, and also to invite him on the show. But so far, I haven't had any luck in reaching the campaign, but I'll keep trying. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.